Judge Anna Von writes, I have heard about you for years. I have had people stalking me, telling me that I had to pay attention to you, that I had to read your books. I actually have people who send me your books without any return address, so that every time you write something, it shows up on my doorstep. Along with Ben Fulford and Wayne Jett and Martin Armstrong and a few others, I consider you one of the true seers. And I also consider you something of a mystic, because you seem to understand things that have been concealed by the mists of history. So let me just start by asking you to tell us, what do we need to know about you as a person? Just a little bit about how you got to where you are from the day you were born in 2 minutes.
Well, I started my life, at least my public life, as someone that was interested in mathematics and science. I'm a fish out of water when it comes to law and history. And yet I was obliged by circumstance within my own life to learn law and history. So maybe I look at it a little bit differently, or approach it more of a with a research bent than many people would. That may account for the appearance of being able to wipe away the mists of time. Actually, it's just well-honed research skills, I think, and sort of a mathematical, logical, deductive reasoning pattern that I have that, leads me to look from one thing to the next and to make surmises and theories, and then check those theories out in a more scientific fashion. So that then leads to both discounting things that you've been told, or looking for things that are negative results. For example, looking for a declaration of war in the Civil War yielded a negative result. Looking for a peace treaty that ended the Civil War also yielded a negative result. And sometimes it's the negative results that are more important than the positive results, the things that you are expecting. Going to the Congressional Library and doing research on the Reconstruction Acts, that also was more or less a negative result, because you would expect that when the Reconstruction was finished, the Reconstruction Acts would be repealed or amended or set aside. Something would have happened. But in fact, the vast bulk of the Reconstruction Acts remain in full force and effect today.
That is really fascinating. And yeah. I'm going to ask you just very briefly to tell us in a very short snapshot what remains in force. And then we'll go into my next question, which is, how did we get into this mess?
Well, virtually all of the Reconstruction Acts remain in force. Nothing has changed. The Reconstruction has not been finished.
And what does that mean in terms of Southern civil liberties and the impact on the South from the North?
Well, it's come to mean that the entire country is affected by the same situation. Because at the end of the Civil War, the South was in ruins, right?
Yes.
It was what they call in law ruinated, and the North was bankrupt. So one of the things, fundamental things you have to understand, is that the entire war was fought by a confederation. It was not fought by the actual states. It was fought by states of states that were commercial organizations. It was
let me go right into the next question then. How did this whole mess start? Because it sounds like you're segueing into that.
Well, it started because there were opportunities left open at when we finished off with the War of Independence. It set up a situation where there are opportunities for fraud and various other wrongdoings were created, sort of in a incipient state, so that with the right circumstances, some players could take advantage of that, and they did. A lot of people do not understand that, you know, our government of the people, by the people, for the people, is a living government by definition. And it is based in the land and soil jurisdiction of the country, because that's where we live. We live on the land, right? Mm-hmm. Land and soil. So we have a living government, and then we have a non-living government, a corporate government. All right? Mm-hmm. And the way this was set up was that the states had a federation of states, unincorporated federation, called the United States of America. Right? That's the federation. And all of the member states that are part of the federation are just simply named Wyoming, Virginia, Wisconsin, Minnesota. There's no state of attached to that. It's just Wisconsin is a member of the United States of America Federation of States. Okay?
It's very difficult for me to grasp all of this, but I will say that I had an insight in the process of preparing the lecture on the top 2,000 books that I've read. And I realized that we didn't actually win the War of Independence. The Freemasons and the British won the War of Independence, and they simply began covert control of the United States or of the colonies. Is there a way you can explain to us how the federal government that we're responsive to today, that taxes us, is in fact not our government? Or what is going on here?
It's the difference between something that's unincorporated, something that's corporate, and something that is incorporated. Three different states of being, if you will. Okay? I am an unincorporated entity. Okay? I don't require a charter from anyone to be. Okay? Now, a business, like a small business, would be an example of a corporate entity. For example, Taylor and Sons Auto Body Shop, okay? They're not incorporated, but they're corporate. They're mm-hmm. apart from an entity apart from the people, right?
Yes.
And then you have incorporated entities like GM and, GE and all the other incorporated entities that we think of that hold a charter from a state or a state of state. And they are occupying another whole realm of reality, another layer, if you will. So we, the people, live in our states that are land and soil and physically defined. But these other things that are basically corporate or incorporated live in an airy-fairy realm, sort of like the Wizard of Oz, where things are what they call inchoate. They're incomplete states. They're not physical. They're not physically defined. They're ideas. They are concepts that we give structure and meaning to by a process of naming and labeling and defining. So, for example, Wisconsin is a state. The state of Wisconsin is a state of state. And to find the definition of a state of state, you go to the Uniform Commercial Code and to their definition section. And there you find that it's an inchoate entity. It's a legal fiction. It exists in the sense that we've defined it and labeled it. Set aside a purpose for it. We have officers or we have owners, right? But it isn't really something that you can hold in your hand.
Let's jump ahead, because this is very difficult for me, and I know it's going to be difficult for others, but you have a huge following, and we're going to end by referring to three of your books that others can read. You've talked sure. about how the federal government has three subcontractors, and that mm-hmm. they are somehow beyond, at least it's my impression, they're beyond lawful authority of we the people. So it seems like they're these artificial constructs that are out of control. Can you talk right. about that?
Okay. Well, your state is supposed to control your American state of state, but the American state of state isn't functioning. So that left space for the two European subcontractors, the Pope and the Queen, to move in on us and usurp against the lawful government. And that's what they did. You have three subcontractors, one of them is out of commission. So the other two moved in and usurped upon the duties and the rights and roles of the one that's not functioning. Okay?
Are the Freemasons in here anywhere?
The Freemasons have a lot to do with what goes on in the Holy Roman Empire, in the what people set aside as the Vatican and Pontificate. See, the Roman pontiff is an office apart from the sacred office of the Pope, which is called the ministerial office. So the Pope has been wearing two different hats for centuries. One that is the sacred office, the ministerial office that we all think of, and the other is the secular office of the pontiff, the Roman pontiff, which handles all of the business affairs of the church. So one of the subcontractors was the Holy See. So we did have or do have a relationship with the Holy See as one of the federal subcontractors, and they were in charge of what we call the municipal government.
Where does the Queen of England and where does the elite of the United Kingdom come in to how the United States is managed through a special relationship that appears to be against the Constitution?
Well, it's the way this all sorted out was at the end of the War of Independence, we had a huge commercial fleet, but no navy. And our commercial fleet was being decimated by French privateers. They were raiding our commercial shipments to Europe and especially to England. So the colonists had no market for their goods, and the British didn't have a way of getting the raw materials they needed for their factories. So basically, the founding fathers cut a deal whereby the British Navy would protect our commercial fleets on the high seas and navigable inland waterways. And so the British King became our trustee on the high seas and navigable inland waterways, and basically has control of our Navy on the high seas and navigable inland waterways as a result. So that was the quid pro quo, and that's why it was started, and that's why it was done that way.
Is there a document? Is there a document that says this, or is this some kind of understanding that you've intuited based on your research?
No, there are actual naval treaties that lay this all out between the United States and Westminster, which is that end of the British government. There are treaties of Westminster going back before the war and after the war. And you have to look at the naval treaties to dope out what these relationships are. And there are also treaties of Versailles. We think of the Treaty of Paris as being the definitive treaty ending the War of Independence, but there are also treaties of Versailles and treaties of Westminster that play in here. And they go back to about 1756 and forward from there.
Is it fair to say that these treaties are still in force? And that they are leading to covert dealings that are not declared to Congress or the public?
Well, I'm sure that at least some members of the Congress who are dealing with naval affairs are well aware of this. They would have to be, because this is coming forward in time. There hasn't been a break in this. There's been no renegotiation of it. And so there have to be people in the current time who are well aware of it. But essentially, that's the special relationship that we have with the Queen. Now, the other special relationship that might be referenced is that the British territorial government is our territorial government. which is kind of an oddball situation. The federal government is supposed to be primarily run by the States of America Confederation that ceased to function. And bumping down from there, you have the British territorial government that had stipulated duties that were expanded when the States of America went offline. The British territorial government is a commonwealth centered in Puerto Rico. And that is where they have basically set up their administration, is Puerto Rico. And as a result, that has had other implications, and other things have been worked out of Puerto Rico, one of the insular states, that should never have happened. For example, the IRS was headquartered out of Puerto Rico.
The Internal Revenue Service, the Internal Revenue Service was headquartered out of Puerto Rico. I mean, I've never heard of this, and I know it's important. Please let me say very clearly, I trust you, I believe that you're a very serious person who has done some very serious research, but how do you get the average American to understand that there are some really weird things going on here?
Well, I think just the fact that it was headquartered out of Puerto Rico is weird enough to get the attention of most people. It certainly got my attention when I first learned it. The fact that there are two Internal Revenue Services that we're fighting with.
Tell us about that. Tell us about two Internal Revenue Services.
Well, because we have two foreign subcontractors, one British and one Papist, we have two Internal Revenue Services. We have the Territorial Internal Revenue Service that you see, it's written in upper and lower case, Internal Revenue Service, right? And that is the territorial subcontractor. And then you have IRS, which is just the alphabet soup designation, IRS, in capital letters. That's the Municipal Internal Revenue Service.
Now, are you saying that the IRS that we pay taxes to, that we pay federal taxes to, is the municipal service?
Yes, they are the ones that are in actually doing the contract work. But we have two Internal Revenue Services, and either one of them can come in and make a claim against us.
And how does this other Internal Revenue Service get money?
It does the same thing. It makes a charge against your account, and it gives you notice that you owe them money, and then they try to get you to pay them. And the only difference that you're going to observe is that the paperwork you receive will be slightly different, and the territorial business will be in upper and lower case, and the municipal business will be in all caps.
Now, I have never in my lifetime received documentation from anyone other than the IRS, which also spells out its name as Internal Revenue Service. So am I unusual, or how is this other IRS impacting on people's lives?
Well, you actually are getting billed at the same time by both of them. It's just how they use your name, which account they're trying to access. When you look at correspondence that you get from the IRS, if it's in all capital letters, you're being charged against a municipal account. And if it's in upper and lower case, you're being charged against a territorial account. So it would be sort of like having two different names and having two different subcontractors doing something for you. You know, say that I have a housekeeping service and I have a lawn keeping service. And the lawn keeping service sends it to my name in all caps, and the housekeeping service sends the bills in upper and lower case. This is how they keep it straight between them, which billing for which service, okay? And most people don't realize that they're dealing with two different subcontractors and two different Internal Revenue Services. So I'm just sort of throwing that out as an example of, you know, it's right there in front of our faces, but we can't understand it. It's encoded as in federal code so that we don't know what it means.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, there has been some serious discussion about eliminating the Internal Revenue Service. And I believe that our President Donald Trump has some big economic surprises, including an announcement next week, and other economic surprises coming in the new year. Let's say that he eliminates the Internal Revenue Service in favor of Professor Edgar Feige's automated payment transaction tax, which automatically takes a tiny transaction tax off every sale. How do we audit or investigate or eliminate these things? I mean, what does the president have to do in order to satisfy you as a citizen that we have cleaned up the mess?
The first and foremost thing that I would like to see is recognition of the fact that the people of this country are owed the American National Credit.
That's very important. Let's expand on that, because I've really absolutely resonated with what you've talked about there. And I particularly like your example about how you shouldn't be able to buy a hamburger with an IOU. So tell us more about this, because I also will say to you, I think the president has recovered over $15 trillion, maybe more, from the private banks that have been issuing debt. So give us the Anna von Reitz perspective on not only where the illegitimate debt is, but how we, the people, can basically say, the hell with all of you. We are free, sovereign, natural law people, and you ain't going to get any more money from us.
Well, at least for public debt, they shouldn't be getting any more money from us, because they have huge slush funds that are turning over incredible amounts of new income all the time. And they can use these to fund any governmental services that are needed. That goes back to the work that Walter Burian did with the CAFRI accounts, the acronym is CAFR, and they're the annual financial reports of the governments at all levels. And those, if you study them, reveal that they have huge slush funds that are earning more than enough to fund all functions of government. So there's really no excuse to tax us at all. They've already accumulated all of that. That's a separate issue from the American National Credit, which is what happens, how that accumulates is through their debt-based fiat system. And the hamburger example is, you know, something everyone can understand. A Federal Reserve note is a promissory note. It's an IOU, and it's a military script. And those of you who've been offshore in the military know what a military script is. On base, you've got a different script that you use that periodically gets changed out that allows you to trade at the PX as apart from the local economy. Well, that's what a Federal Reserve note is.
And it's okay. Neither federal nor reserve. As Wayne Jett has pointed out, those Federal Reserve notes are an obligation on the private banks, not on the federal government.
Right. Well, it's a private bank situation, but the debt does get transferred because of the Treasury Department and the Treasury bonding process. The Treasury bond indebts the people, okay? So the Federal Reserve is sort of like a broker. They sit in the middle. They're the middlemen. They're issuing the notes, but then they're selling the note back to the Treasury in exchange for Treasury bonds. But anyway, that's another whole business. The idea that people have to get into their heads is that the American National Credit is exactly the same in the positive as the U.S. national debt was in the negative.
Is it fair to say that the president could declare a debt jubilee? And we speak of sovereign debt and we speak of individual debt. I don't want to suggest any specific things, because I know nothing about all of this. but I have this impression that a debt jubilee is somewhere in our future. Is there a way of the president doing something with your knowledge to that end?
Well, if the president would sit down with me for, you know, a day.
You can get two minutes.
I know, but he has problems. He has a lot of financial problems, and there are a lot of things that he doesn't know about the history of the finances of this country. And I have all the records. I mean, I know where all the bodies are buried. And so if he would sit down with me, with a whole group of people, you know, bring his accountants, bring his top people in for a day, I could show him stuff that would make his hair curl. And I could show him where the American people are owed so much money. We have been fleeced for 150 years.
When you say we have been fleeced for 150 years, have we been fleeced primarily by the Pope and the British rather than the Chinese and the Russians?
That's right. Our friends were the ones that did it to us. And when I say British, I'm including the Scots, because a lot of the dirty work was funneled through the Scots.
And the Scottish Freemasonry group.
And the Scottish, well, it's not necessarily their fault, because, I mean, the Queen would have been wanting them to do this, all right?
Yes, so, and I personally suspect the Commonwealth is going to break apart in the next 10 years, just as I expect NATO to expire and the United Nations to be thrown out of New York. As we move toward our final 4 to 6 minutes, I want to ask you, I think you could bring together a conference and you could create an open space event at which all of this could be brought out and then gradually put into bite-sized pieces. But before I ask you about your three books, which I want people to consider reading, how would you sum this up if you were trying to explain this to the president in 3 minutes? How do you say in 1 minute, this is the problem, in a second minute, this is what you need to do, and in the third minute, here is the outcome?
Well, the first minute would have to be, okay, we've been fleeced. Here's how and why and by who.
Good.
Okay, here's how we have brought together all the records of this fleecing operation, and here are the major parts of it, and here's how we collect on it. And three, it really doesn't take a whole lot, because I've already done a lot of footwork. I mean, I have not been silent or sitting under a rock for the last 20 years. I've been working this and bringing forward the claims against the Queen and the Pope for 20 years. So, I mean, there is no due process to be done. The liens are in place. I put the liens in place for all of our land and our soil. I've indemnified everything. I mean, most of the work is done. All that has to happen is that people who are presently in political power need to understand better how we got here and what needs to happen to fix it.
I think the only thing I would differ with you on is we need a whole new political class. Obviously, I tried very hard with hashtag unrig, which was destroyed by people that do not want to see America first. But I would like to think there is a bright future for America. And I absolutely respect your knowledge. And even though I don't understand it, I have a gut level appreciation for your intelligence and your integrity and your imagination. And I think your voice needs to be heard, and perhaps others will understand it more easily than I will and will help me eventually understand it. Let us finish by asking you to name three books that people could consider reading to better appreciate all of the hard work you've done over these last decades.
Well, I think the place to start is at the start with Disclosure 101, which is sort of the history of how I got involved, what I learned, and what went on with the Pope early on trying to resolve this mess, because Benedict XVI, in my opinion, made a good faith effort to try to straighten it out and bring back some kind of government that would be worthwhile. For the municipal side of things, which is where it's all running amok. Anyway, so Disclosure 101 for the background and history and 11 pages of references, reference materials that people can read. Then in 2015, we issued You Know Something Is Wrong When, an American Affidavit of Probable Cause. And that goes, was intended to be kind of a sixth grade level cartoon book, something fun, fast, that people could quickly grasp. And also it was actually sent out as an affidavit to the world court.
This is the same world court that is not allowed to investigate U.S. crimes against humanity. What's your third book?
The third book is America, Some Assembly Acquired. And that is the information in the soundbite form. So if you're the kind of person that can take in a soundbite and follow along, it's a very fast way to get up to speed. And it was intended as an executive primer so that you could just kind of click along, you know, 30 seconds at a bite and get this very quickly.
All right, let's stop there. I mean, my head hurts. It really does. But let me say with absolute clarity, I think you are a very important person. You have done some very important research. And somewhere in our future, we need to factor in everything that you've brought to the table. So Anna von Reitz, let me thank you very, very sincerely from the heart. And I salute you. And God bless you. God bless everyone watching this. God bless America. And God bless the orange man, because I think he's part of the solution also. Bye-bye, everybody.
Take care.